Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
This is Patrick Prince, editor of Goldmine, and that music is from Kathy Valentine, a song called Hullabaloo from the soundtrack of Kathy's new memoir, All I Ever Wanted. After moving to Los Angeles, the guitarist Kathy Valentine played with a few different bands before joining the poppy, punky, all-girl band called The Go-Go's. You may have heard of them. Those Go-Go's. The Go-Go's are considered the most successful all-female band of all time. I mean, there was Fanny, there was The Runaways, but The Go-Go's made music history for having the first and only album by an all-female band to top the charts, and Kathy Valentine was obviously a big part of that. I mean, she wrote or co-wrote some of the band's most popular hits, like, say, Vacation and Head Over Heels and others. And this month, the University of Texas Press published Valentine's memoir, her first book ever, called All I Ever Wanted, A Rock and Roll Memoir. That's the full title. Also taking a cool, innovative approach, like Alison Moore with her memoir Blood, Valentine released the soundtrack of original songs to accompany her memoir. The soundtrack makes sense because this is more about Valentine's personal coming-of-age story and her own rock and roll trip. It's not just about the Go-Go's experience. There's a lot here. She also released this as an audiobook put out by Hachette, and I have that, and I like that even more than the written word. Valentine's a natural when it comes to reading her own memoir. She might have a future podcast, even. You never know. Anyway, the Go-Go's were slated to go on tour this summer, but we'll see how that goes. Keep up to date with it. Keep looking online if the pandemic flattens out this summer or not. And speaking of the pandemic, many couples are probably quarantined together, and this following ad spot will be a good opportunity for them. If any of our listeners are in relationships and they want to get some excitement into those relationships, their time together at home, go to adamandeve.com. Adam and Eve is an upscale specialty boutique for discerning couples. And if you go to adamandeve.com, you'll get free stuff. Free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even, hey, it's even better. Select almost any one item for 50% off, and then Adam and Eve will give you free stuff. If you go to adamandeve.com, all you have to do is fill up your cart and just enter the code GOLDMINE, GOLDMINE, at checkout. You can get up to about 10 free gifts. An item each person in the relationship could use, and then you get a third item you could both enjoy. There are also 6 free movies to choose from, plus, to top it all off, a great deal free shipping. That's offer code GOLDMINE at checkout at adamandeve.com. Okay, let's get Kathy on the phone here and chat about the new memoir, the music, and all things Go-Go's.
Oh, hey, is this Patrick?
Yes. Kathy?
How's it going?
It's good. Thank you. Where are you located?
Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay. So you guys aren't hit as hard as... I'm in the New York City area, and so we're...
My boyfriend's in a Hell's Kitchen, and he's just giving me blow-by-blows, and it just sounds horrible.
Yeah, it is awful. So we're pretty much on lockdown, and...
Yeah, like even going to the parks see, you know, people always ruin it. Like, you could go to the park, and then people, like, mess that up.
Yeah. Yeah, no one's, you know,
I think Central Park's open, right?
Yeah. You know, you have your climate deniers, but here you go with the COVID-19 deniers. They think this is all hype, and it's kind of sad.
It's pretty amazing I've seen things that, like, leave me flabbergasted, because every now and then I'll just go on a little journey to seeing what the crazies are saying and thinking.
Yes.
On Twitter or something. And I've seen so many of them think this is a conspiracy by Bill Gates to make everyone get microchips so that he can vaccinate them all. That's what they think. Is that a new one for you?
That's a new one for me, but I'm not surprised. But let's talk about the rock and roll men. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So just one more thing. One more. No, that's okay. One more thing on that. Have you ever, like, known somebody that was, like, your friend or a pretty good acquaintance, and then one day they pop out with some conspiracy theory that they believe, and you're like,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
And it's like, and all of a sudden it's like your friendship, you just, like, it just changes everything. And they're like, what? You know,
it does. So I had a friend who told me to watch the sky trails, and because they're poisoning the population. And I was just like, wow, I've known this guy for like 30 years, and all of a sudden he's watching YouTube videos about, you know, he's watching the sky.
It's just as easy to find the debunked one that debunked that theory. They're so easy, but they don't look at that stuff, right?
I think they want to create drama in their lives. I don't know what it is. So all I ever wanted, you know, I got to say, I listened to the audio version, and I want to ask you about that, because you come off as not only a natural as far as writing a memoir, but as far as doing an audiobook, you seem natural.
Wait, you heard the audiobook?
Yeah.
You heard it?
Yeah, I was listening to it last night.
I haven't even heard that yet.
Oh, you come off really well, and you got to tell me, how were you comfortable? How did you?
This amazing woman at Hachette Audio got wind of the book from Michael Azarad, who's my friend, and I sent him an advanced copy. I sent him the soundtrack, and he said, "This is I love this," and he sent it to Hachette, and I looked her up, and she was like this award-winning audiobook producer, and she was the absolute right person to do my audiobook. So she Skyped it. So now I'm going to your question. She, I'm sorry, I'm such a blabbermouth. I just kind of start going. So tell me to stop if you need me to.
No.
But she Skyped in. I went to a recording studio in Austin, and she Skyped in and gave me direction. And there was an engineer in the other room, and it was just, I did it. They had like 4 days booked, and I did it in 2.5. So I guess I was pretty good at it.
You were.
From what you're saying.
You are.
Cool.
You even gave Hachette a plug at the beginning. So naturally, I was.
Well, maybe I have another career, and maybe people will hire me to do their audiobooks.
Or you could start your own podcast. No, but I like in the beginning how you said that talking about women in rock. I mean, in the beginning, there was, when you started with the Go-Go's, you had the Runaways, you had Chrissy Hynde. I mean, one thing for sure, rock and roll has made a lot of progress in that area, because I see such great female artists. I'll bring one up, for example, PJ Harvey. I don't know if you've heard of her, but
yeah, of course.
So many, and it's
so original.
It's such a great thing.
I always forget to mention PJ Harvey, and I love her.
It's such a great thing. That has progressed to a certain extent. Where do you think it is now, as far as women in rock? How do you view it now, as compared to the Go-Go's?
But what I like like is that you see women in major bands all the time. You see major artists hiring women in their bands. And I don't know. I'm sure it because it looks cool and it's a good thing, but they're not going to. They can hire the best musicians. They're not going to just hire a woman because she's a woman. So, right. You know, when Beyonce puts together a band, I mean, I've seen, you know, many years ago I saw CeeLo Green and he had an all-woman band, and Pink always has women in her band. And, you know, when Bowie was alive, he had Gail Ann Dorsey. I mean, there's just so many women doing top-notch work as touring and studio musicians. So that's really cool. I love that. There's a lot of, you know, pretty, like you say, innovative artists, performers and musicians and songwriters. But what I don't think, what I'm surprised at is still how few women want to be in an all-female band. You know, I mean, I really enjoy the sisterhood of that. And I really thought, I mean, that was my goal before I got into Go-Go's. I wanted to see up in the pantheon of all the classic bands with longevity and that evolve and put out record after record after record for decades, whether it's a U2 or whether it's the Stones, I wanted to see women bands doing that. And, you know, I'm a little disappointed that longing, I still have that longing. And I just don't see anybody. I mean, I got really far. I got to do a lot, you know, as far as being in the Go-Go's. But, you know, I would just love to see, you know, Foo Fighters, U2, Stones, Who, Led Zeppelin. Oh, I could just go on and on. Radiohead and Green Day and all these bands that have been around forever. And they're all men. Of all the female bands, I don't know. And the Donnas were awesome, you know.
Yes.
But I don't know if they were like doing that thing like the Go-Go's did and the Bangles did in terms of having like a commercial widespread, you know, super cool bands. I don't need commercial widespread, but the Go-Go's had hit songs.
Well, I like the word sisterhood. I think that's important.
That's what I want to see. I want to see, and I'm curious. I'm just interested in general why more girls don't want to put a band with their girlfriends, you know?
Right.
Like, lots of women want to go join a fucking sorority when they go to college, you know? Fucking thousands of them want to do that. So,
very true.
Interested why, more of them don't want to start a rock and roll band with their mates, you know? That was the first thing I wanted to do the second I picked up a guitar.
Well,
or the second, actually, I should say, as soon as I realized I could be in a band.
Have you seen that movie, Her Smell? Have you heard about that movie?
No.
It's about an
Her
oral...
Smell?
Yeah, it's a weird title. It's about an all-girl rock band. I think it's based on Hole. But it shows all the aspects of putting an all-girl rock band together. It's kind of chaotic because it tries to capture that chaotic rock scene backstage. Look it up when you get a chance. It was made in 2018. It's an indie film.
Okay.
I think it made too much about the drug use and hedonism and stuff like that, which I'm sure does go on, but I wanted to see more about the actual music industry.
And the music, that was one of the things in my book. I really wanted to write about not only what it was like to be in a band, from the minute you plug in a electric guitar to an amp and how empowering that feels.
Mm.
I mean, for me, when I was, you know, 15 years old and 1976 and kind of coming through a tumultuous adolescence and a very lost and confused growing up with a single parent that wasn't really giving me much guidance or boundaries. So a lot of painful stuff and plugging that, I really wanted to get on the page, like how empowering that felt. And so in my book, I wanted to write about the music and how music had been there for me and pulling me through life, just pulling me along, even before I became a musician. And then what it felt like to, you know, be in a band and go on the stage and have thousands or hundreds at the beginning and then thousands of people just like totally digging and grooving on what you're doing on the stage. It's just like, to write about the music was so important to me, you know, because I think until we hear how important music is to women musicians, there's going to keep being this separation, like women who rock, fierce women who rock.
Yes.
You know, these are the women, this is the class of 2020 women who rock. It's like that doesn't happen to guys when they start bands.
No.
And I would like it to just get normalized to a point, like, you know, and maybe if it's more about the music rather than the gender, you know, I don't know what, it's just something that interests me and has for a long time.
When you were growing up, you talked about seeing Susie Quattro on TV, right? When you were 14, and that really had an impact on you, correct?
Yes, I had picked up a guitar and I was strumming along on my guitar and learning my folk songs, like I had seen so many other girls that played guitar do, and I never made the connection that the people in the bands that I liked, whether it was, you know, the guitar player in David Bowie's band or Keith Richards or Eric Clapton or Jimmy Page, it never occurred to me that I could get up on a stage and do that too. And it wasn't until I was in England and saw Susie Quattro on television that it was like I called the chapter earthquake. It was like the ground opened under me. Mm. Oh, I can do that. She should definitely be in the Rock Hall, because Joan Jett had the same thing happen. You know, that's Susie Quattro is why so many girls that were teenagers in the mid 70s became musicians. She's the reason.
And I think she was more popular in England than America, if I'm not mistaken.
She wasn't really known in America. She had started a band as a teenager in 1964 in Detroit called The Pleasure Seekers. So she was doing it in the 60s. Like, by the time I saw her, she had been playing music for 10 years, if not more. So she went to England and she was discovered by the Chinny Chat glam rock, Mike Chapman and Nikki Chin team that were working with the Sweet and you know, all the glitter and glam bands of that era. So they kind of took her under their wing.
Yeah, because I was saying,
she's a rock star.
Oh, she is, and her new album is pretty damn good. It's been out for probably a year or so now, but she could still rock. That's for damn sure.
And there's a documentary coming out. I can't wait to see it because I'm in it. I don't even remember doing it. I don't even remember doing this interview, but apparently I'm in her documentary.
I'll check that out.
Susie Q.
You're right, though. I can remember being a young kid in the 70s, and I only knew Susie Quattro as Leather Tuxedero and Happy Days. I didn't know her as Susie Quattro. And it was weird because, you know, it should have been the opposite way around. And then I got introduced
to her. I think it was probably a mixed blessing for her because that daughter, you know, known in America, and I'm sure it paid really well, but it kind of is in America one of the only things that people associate her with.
Now, I mean, that's a great accomplishment of the Go-Go's is the only all-female band to have an album number one on the U.S. charts. I know we're talking about all-female bands, but that is a great accomplishment.
Yeah, another thing about that accomplishment that has nothing to do with being female is that we were the first indie band that I know of to have a number one record.
Right. A lot of people don't know.
The other band had major labels, you know, the right. Blondie and the Ramones and the Sex Pistols. They all had big, giant corporate record companies putting out their albums.
And I think another thing is that...
By 1982, I should say, by 1981... I mean, I'm not saying they didn't start out on little labels, but there was no Sub Pop or all those like labels that came up. I mean, IRS Records had a hit record, you know? They had a number one hit. And so it was just as much a triumph for them as it was for the Go-Go's. So I like to point that out.
And do you find that a lot of Go-Go's fans know that you guys started pretty much as a punkish type band? I don't know if you yourself would call your early years punk, but...
Well, I started playing guitar before the punk days, but punk rock showed me that I could be in a band without having to be a virtuoso. So it was key for me.
Right.
But yeah, the Go-Go's have a documentary coming out that really focuses a lot of the narrative on how the band came from the punk scene in L.A. So that was integral to the band starting. And yeah, I was not in the band when they came out of the punk scene. I was right. still either in England or Austin, but it was affecting me too. I started the first punk band in Austin. I left England thinking, okay, I don't have to play like Jimmy Page to do this. I can start now.
And that was kind of like it did. Artistic expressionism. You know what I mean? It wasn't, you didn't have to paint.
Oh yeah. It changed everything. And it was like, it was very fluid. I mean, you didn't have to look like you were in Black Flag or the Sex Pistols. You know, you could still be kind of a rock and roll band that was just rough and raw. Or it could be lyrically you were a punk band, maybe, or just in your energy. Or, you know, you didn't have to, I mean, the Ramones looked like the Ramones. Mm-hmm. You know, they just looked, they were the epitome of like what punk really meant. You know, that, and it was just like, it was very fluid and very encompassing and who was allowed to be a part of that movement or who could claim, you know, what was behind that movement.
Do you remember your first gig at the Whiskey in LA? I'm trying to remember if you said if the thoughts going through your head about who had played there before, and it must have been quite an experience.
Well, I wrote about it. I mean, my book actually starts out with right. me, and I had played the Whiskey before in my bands, but what was a new experience and what I tried to relate in was the feeling of getting on stage. Having 8 consecutive sold out shows with the audience going crazy, really loving the band, being with people that felt like they could be like my sisters, like a family, and just playing music that I loved the songs. And I was 21 years old, and it was really something I had been searching for. It was kind of the only missing piece. I had gotten to do a lot of cool things. I'd played in bands in Austin and in London, and I had, you know, moved to L.A., and I jammed at a prison with Buddy Miles and had Smokey Robinson come and walk into a room. But I hadn't played sold-out shows on the Sunset Strip with everybody freaking out and loving you. And so it was, and that's what I strove to get on the page, was what it felt like. And that's how I start the book, actually.
Right, I'm looking at it.
I start with my birth.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. You know, your prose, you're a very talented writer. Have you ever tried to write before?
I knew I could write because I've been going to college. I've taken college level creative writing classes where I wrote short stories. And even in not a writing class, you still have to do research papers and essays, and you have to do a good job if you're going to make a good grade. So I knew I could write. I had done stuff. I'd written about things in my life, but it's a different thing to write a book. You know, you can be a good writer and still you have to battle a lot of stuff to write a good book. And there was a lot of times writing this book where I would kind of go over what I had done the day before, and they call it kill your darlings. Like, I would read something and go, this is really good writing. This is a meaningful thing that happened, but it's not moving the story forward, or it's not memoir writing. It's like, right. It's like an essay. It's good writing, but it's not memoir. Memoir is when you can make somebody go, I know what she feels like. I have felt that way too. And you feel a connection through the page to the writer and the reader. And it's an amazing thing to accomplish. And that's what I tried to do. That was my goal. And if I came close even a few times, I feel really proud and that I succeeded. You know what I mean?
When did it come to you that you wanted to write a memoir, and did you tell other members of the Go-Go's about it?
Well, they knew I wanted to write a book, and I think they were nervous. I don't think they knew what kind of book I was going to write. Like, in fact, I had agents tell me, and going back, I wanted to write a book.
Right.
But I started thinking the smartest thing is to write, for the first book should be the book that only I can write.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I thought of it was like this: if I did short stories or if I did a novel, you're really competing against every literary genius there is that's also writing short stories and novels. But if my first book was my memoir, I'm the only one that can do that. I'm the only one that can write my memoir.
Right.
So I felt like it was a smart thing because it would open the door. It would show people, you know, readers would see that I could tell a story and that I could engage them on the page. So it was a smart move, I thought. But in the way, if you want to have a writing career, for me, it seemed like the way to open the door to doing that. So, but as far as the Go-Go's, yeah, they knew I wanted to do it. I think they were nervous. They all have read it and support it and are really happy with it. But I had an agent once tell me, you know, you won't get a book deal unless you write a tell-all, like, spill all the dirt kind of book. And I was like, well, that's not what I want to write. And he said, well, probably you won't get a book deal then, because that's who's going to care about you writing a book. And I was like, I don't know, but that's not the book I want to write. So when I got approached by the University of Texas Press, one of the reasons I loved them and went with them was they were allowed me to write the book I wanted to write, and they weren't interested in a tell-all, spill the dirt book. They just wanted me to write what I wanted to write. So that was really cool.
Well, this is, I mean, I heard you describe it as a coming of age story, and quite frankly, you get very personal about this before even the Go-Go's come on the scene. You talk about how things that happen when you were 12. You talk about addiction. I mean, this is stuff that the Go-Go's don't have any part of, really.
Yeah, I wasn't writing the story of the Go-Go's. I was writing my story. So
exactly.
Part of my story is that I joined that band. But yeah, if I was going to write a book about the Go-Go's, it would have been a different book. But a memoir, it's my story, and my story was all the stuff that I wrote about. And that's what makes it resonate with so many readers, is that it's a very human story.
Yes.
It's not just like, I was in a band that went to number one. That's not the book.
Right.
That happened in there. That happens in the middle of the book.
Yes.
But everything that I wrote about happened. So there was a lot more that happened. And a lot of the stuff that had nothing to do with the Go-Go's is what a lot of people really are resonating with.
Right. That's true. That's part of it. It's the coming of age thing that I think I like the most. I think that's more so than the looking for any tell all dirt with the Go-Go's. I mean, I mentioned.
Thank you. I think most people are like that.
I mentioned this to a friend who is a fan of the Go-Go's, and he said, well, does she talk about male groupies and does she spill it all? And I was like, oh man, is that?
Well, I do actually. I say there weren't any male groupies.
Right. But isn't it funny how that was like the first thing on his mind.
Yeah. It is funny.
Because back, I remember those stories back when the Go-Go's first formed and came out. You know, there were these made up stories about you guys, all these male groupies, blah, blah, blah. There are so many of those stories in rock and roll that are just all BS.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to make sure that I just wrote my story, and I didn't want to write anything about anybody else in the band,
right?
Because that's their story to tell. So I really tried to write about things that happened to me in the band. Sometimes if somebody else was there and they had revealed that before, either in an interview or article or something, I felt comfortable writing about something. If another band member was with me and they had revealed anything to do with addiction or anything that happened, then I felt comfortable writing about it.
Do you find the how much the music industry has changed? Do you find it alarming how it went from putting out product like you know, hit album, now it's kind of, it went to touring, and the album was just sort of like a secondary piece, and now, and Goldmine's very involved with this, putting out product that is sort of very tangible, box set type things, collections, vinyl. I mean, it's very interesting. How do you view it?
Well, first of all, you know, what Goldmine does is awesome. I mean, I was good friends with Gary Stewart.
Mm.
Always loved how he kind of kept trying to find a new way to be in the music business as a lover of music.
Because mm-hmm.
I think the struggle is not just in the music business, but it's just in life, how people that are artists or into the art work in a corporate environment, you
yes.
know, that really doesn't care about that. And what they care about is money and making more money and more
yes.
money. So it's a struggle for all of us. It's a struggle for anybody that is kind of, you know, trying to be an artist and a purist and support creativity and art in a corporate world where it's all about marketing and branding.
Yes.
And it's just really hard. So it's awesome what Goldmine does. And there's a couple of times where I've had to talk about my brand. Okay, I need to figure out what my brand is. And I'm like, retching just thinking it, like, this is not what I want to be.
Yes.
You know, but at the same time, you try to take the good out of it. You try to take, okay, what's the relevant thing that I can take from this and use it to help me. And so for me, I was like, okay, I'm known as the bass player in a band from 1980 that had a hit in 1982.
Mm.
And that was a long time ago. And that's not what I want to be. I want that to be the foundation
mm-hmm.
that I built something on.
Right.
And so I try to take the idea of a brand or building and not be like gross about it, you know, and just start, but use that thinking to kind of be smart about
right.
how, because we're really all we're trying to do, all of us, is try to freaking pay the bills and get by and have enough. I mean, I guess some people want more than enough, and good for them. They fuck up the world. But most of us want just enough. We want to be able to pay our bills.
Correct.
You know, have enough money if we get sick, or to take care of the people in our lives that aren't as fortunate as us, or to take a little vacation here and there. And it's like, so you just have to figure out how to do that. So that's when that mentality has been helpful to me, because I just started thinking, well, of course that's all you're known as, because that's the only thing that's been, you know, all these other things I've done, I'm really good. I know what a good band looks like and what they sound like. I've put together dozens of bands in my career. I have never not been in a band in 45 years,
mm-hmm.
but only the Go-Go's is the known one. So when you just keep positioning yourself as some kind of person in a band, it's always going to be overshadowed by the fact that I was the bass player in the Go-Go's, always.
Mm-hmm.
So what I just started thinking of in terms of was like, okay, this writing this book is, it's like kind of being in the spotlight for the first time in my career, mm-hmm. where I'm like, I'm the front person. I never wanted to be the front person.
Right.
You know, I never wanted to be Mick Jagger. I wanted to be Keith. I wanted my little piece of the spotlight, but I didn't want to be ever the face. So writing a book, and then I wrote a soundtrack to the book, which is super creative and innovative, and probably the best music I've ever made. And I've started over the past like 10 years doing some speaking engagements and really trying to take the platform of being a mentor and someone that did something, you know, that was quite remarkable, and using it to create something where I can continue, because I'm not in a band that works all the time, you know, and I get by, but I still got to figure out what am I going to do to earn a living. So that's a really long-winded answer.
Well, every time I ask that question, some artists say, you know, well, the thing I like about it now is I have more control over my music and my creativity, but it's harder to, you know, market that, you know, it's hard to, it's, you know, you're inundated, the market's inundated with music, a lot of it good, some of it bad, you know, so it's hard to get, the name out there, your music out there.
Absolutely. And some artists, what they are good at is like sitting in their studio and creating something beautiful, and some other musician comes along and what they're good at is getting out there and fucking hustling.
Yes.
24/7. And who's the one you're going to hear about? It's going to be the one that's hustled 24/7.
Right.
You know, who has, and yet the person making something beautiful that maybe they just abhor the idea.
Right.
You know, it's really difficult because, you know, I can't stand the fact that I sometimes sit there and I look up at the clock and I've just spent 3 to 4 hours doing online bullshit, you know, to make sure people know about what the hell I've done. And that's 3 or 4 hours I would have much rather been writing.
Right. You may have more freedom, but some people don't like marketing themselves, and quite frankly, you fall down that social media rabbit hole. Sometimes you feel like...
Yeah, and it's super time-consuming. I mean, I'm trying to promote my book because I had a 23-city book tour that was going to be awesome with really cool people. I had, you know, Kathleen Hanna and Kelly Deal and Tanya Donnelly and all these amazing women and Liz Winstead, and it's all like scrapped, and now I'm like stuck doing everything like post. And then you're like, okay, people, how long before people get sick of you posting about your book? Because nobody wants to be like bombarded all the time with. So it's a tough thing, but I'm doing what I can. I set up a Zoom chat. Tonight was supposed to be a book event in Austin with John Doe from X.
Yeah.
And obviously it was canceled. So we're doing a Zoom chat tonight. And I have spent hours like creating this stupid thing and getting the word out and setting it up and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, ugh. But what's the point if no one's going to be there?
I love the fact that you're connected the song, like songs to this. And you call it a soundtrack, and it makes it like film, like how you include music. I think more books or memoirs or whatever should do this.
Yeah, me too. I'll be doing it more, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, hey man, you could use some of your creative writing and do a soundtrack.
I'm gonna do my short stories and I'm gonna I'm going to resurrect my idea of a short story collection and do tracks to them.
You are? I think that's
a super cool thing to do.
That's a super cool thing to do. That would be great.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I always like playing in a band. I'll probably always have a band. I have a rock and roll band in Austin I love playing with. But as far as being, you know, like a creator, I don't know if the idea just like making records all the time interests me. But writing as an author and then combining it with what I can do musically, that interests me a lot. So I'll be doing more of that.
Well, I think that doing something like short stories with music could be a new thing, really. I would love to see that. You're also lucky to be in Austin because I don't know if, you know, all the acquaintances you have or the friends you made in the music business probably tell you that a lot of the scenes have dried up. You know, being here in New York City, I feel like I've been to Austin and I'm just blown away by how musical Austin is and how much it's embraced there. I'm jealous. So,
yeah, I wouldn't know how to be in a band in New York. It's always seemed hard to me. And I would always say, like, well, what do? You just, like, get a taxi and go to, and everybody's like, yeah, that's what you do. Back in the days when they had the big taxis, you would just put your amp in the, the big yellow taxi.
Now, last question. Of all the people you talked about, John Doe, and, of course, John Belushi was at one of your first gigs, right, with the Go-Go's. Mm-hmm. You have a photo of him with you. Of all the people that you met, celebrities, who had the most effect on you as far as meeting them and developing a relationship?
I think getting to know James Honeyman Scott from The Pretenders.
Oh, yeah.
Was really important to me because he was just a really sweet, easy person to befriend and very open and warm. And he had married, his wife was from Texas too. So we kind of all just got along really well. And when the Go-Go's broke up, and I kind of floundered for a while, I talk about that in the book, I'm really lost. But in the 90s, which might be in my sequel, when I do a sequel memoir, I decided to really go back to my roots and become the guitar player that I had dreamt of being, even though I wasn't in a band that was going to ever maybe, oh, I didn't know, but, you know, I didn't know if I would be in a hit band, but I just wanted to be that musician. And Jimmy was passed away by then, but it was his playing that inspired me the most because he was just so rock and roll, yet so, he just had so much personality and just this unusual sense of style, and the way he played really inspired me. So I would have to say probably him as how he was as a human and as how he was as a player.
And what an underrated guitarist he was. I think about that lead in Kid, short but sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just stuff like that.
And
little
I think
accents.
Chrissy would probably, I'm pretty sure she has said, you know, that his parts and everything were such a big part of the success and the sound of that amazing debut album, The Pretenders, put out.
You could feel the difference when he was gone, you know?
Yeah.
You definitely could. Well, listen, thank you. And I'm going to push the book here.
My pleasure.
And all the best, okay?
Thank you so much. It was really nice talking to you.
Stay safe and sound.
Bye.
Thanks, Kathy Valentine. Be on the lookout for the Go-Go's touring this year. And in the meantime, I recommend you pick up her new memoir, Kathy Valentine's new memoir, All I Ever Wanted, a rock and roll memoir. Even better, the audiobook of it. And it comes with a great soundtrack of Valentine's own solo music as well. Also go to goldmymag.com for exclusive content and a percentage off print and digital subscriptions. And if you sign up for our weekly newsletter, you'll get a free digital download of a goldmine issue. Okay, well, thanks all. Thanks for taking the time, and we will talk to you next time on the Goldmine Podcast. This is Pat Prince, editor of Goldmine, signing off. Bye now.
If you're looking to get a new car, you could really cut expenses by bundling your car and renter's insurance with Progressive. Sure, you love your old car, but you know it's not normal to give instructions on how to open the window. It should be self-explanatory, but it's not. And notice how when you're in other people's cars, you can feel cushion in the seats? That's pretty nice, right? No, it's just normal. So bundle your renter's and car insurance with Progressive and put the savings toward a new car. It's time. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.